Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the day after the primaries in Rhode Island and Vermont, Ohio, and Texas. Today is the 5th of March, and it was a very big night for Senator Hillary Clinton. Thought we would start with a memo that was coming into, I'm sure, newsrooms all over the country today from Hillary for President, from Harold Ickes and Mark Penn. With last night's victories, they write, in Ohio and Texas, one thing is clear, the momentum has swung back to Hillary Clinton. Voters in both states agreed that Hillary would be the best commander-in-chief and the strongest steward of our economy. In fact, according to last night's polls, those who decided who to vote for in the last 3 days overwhelmingly favored Hillary. We'll talk about why that was the case. It's time, they say, for a second look. They start by talking about Ohio, which they call the barometer. The state for the last quarter century has picked our president. As everyone knows, as Ohio goes, so goes our country. It's one of the bellwether states, and it decided the last election. And they say the demographics of the upcoming contests in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Indiana, and Kentucky closely mirror those in Ohio, and Hillary Clinton looks strong in all four states. She suggested this morning that there could be a Clinton-Obama ticket, putting herself at the top of the ticket. There are others who write that it's almost impossible for her to win the election when you look at pledged delegates. Superdelegates may be another matter. So we have a lot to wade through this hour, of course, starting with the obvious first question: how did she win Ohio by a pretty large margin and win Texas, at least the primary, not the caucus vote in Texas? We'll have two guests with us this first hour of the program. Sabrina Eaton, Washington reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, joining us the first half hour. Todd Gilman, Washington Bureau staff writer for the Dallas Morning News, the second half hour. Our phone lines, I would think, would be crowded this morning as you interpret the results of last night's primaries. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. And if you want to go to our email, it's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Sabrina, hello. Thank you.
Hi.
Have you had any sleep?
I did, actually.
Really?
Well, you know, it's 10 o'clock here, so.
You got a little bit.
I did.
Not very much. How did she pull off what was a fairly substantial win in Ohio?
Well, she did quite. Well, first of all, she was, you know, all over Ohio. She had her surrogates all over Ohio. She seemed to be concentrating in many of the population centers, you know, like Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, going there personally herself. She sent she dispatched that little man of hers, Bill Clinton, to some of the sort of, you know, lesser urban areas, and by lesser I mean just smaller population wise, you know, places like Findlay and you know, Marion and folks, you know, places that folks in Ohio would have heard of, but people outside the state are kind of like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And then Chelsea Clinton was blitzing basically every college campus that she went to, so that was part of it. She also had a very energetic bunch of non-family member supporters running around the state for her. Dick Gephardt, who was very big with unions, was doing a lot in the Mahoning Valley, which is the area around Youngstown. Very big union area, a lot of auto workers, things like that. Both the candidates were in there a lot, and she ended up pulling off that area. That's one of the more high delegate sections of the state for Democrats. Additionally, Ted Strickland, the governor of Ohio, who's a really very popular guy, particularly in the more rural areas like the southeastern part of the state, which is where he's from, she really did quite well in many parts of that area. Like, for instance, I think some of those counties she got 70% of the vote. So is that enough for you?
Yeah, that's good. That's very good. What about this? I'm wondering the role of negative campaigning here. Their memo that came from the Hillary office this morning points really in the first paragraph. According to the last night's polls, those who decided to vote in the last 3 days overwhelmingly favored Hillary Clinton. Was that due to that, you know, the phone call at 3 a.m.?
Well, it might be. Actually, there was a little gaffe in Ohio where one of the Obama surrogates had this automated phone call that went off at 1 a.m. People were annoyed at getting a call from 1 a.m., you know, a robocall for an Obama surrogate. But in any event, I mean, that could have been part of it. There was a lot of go-around about the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is extremely unpopular heavily unionized areas, such as the Mahoning Valley and Cleveland, and just basically the whole area along the Great Lakes, where a lot of manufacturing jobs have disappeared in the past decade or so. And there was a lot of, who said what about NAFTA? You know, it's like, did Barack Obama say, tell the Canadian government that he would, that his rhetoric, his anti-NAFTA rhetoric was just rhetoric? He was going on saying that, Hillary Clinton had said positive stuff about NAFTA while her husband was in the White House, things like that. So, and in the final hours of the campaign, there was a lot of go around about that, especially with respect to a meeting that a member of Obama's campaign team supposedly had with the Canadian consulate in Chicago, where he may have given some sort of assurances to Canada. And, of course, the campaign denied it, and, it was this whole mess.
Right. Do you think that was a factor, though, that was really a story gaining traction in Ohio, that maybe he wasn't going to be anti-NAFTA as much as he said he was?
Well, I mean, I think that it's just sort of, I don't know if it was so much that it cast him as being, less against NAFTA than she was, so much as, possibly there being some duplicitousness there. I mean, I think that, he kind of comes off as, squeaky clean. He doesn't have as long a record, as people like, say, John Kerry, where you can, where when he ran in 2004, people could basically pick apart his voting record and say, well, he voted for, pick an issue. He voted for it here, and then he voted against it. And, that Barack Obama just doesn't have, that long a track record that can be dissected. So I think it kind of raised some questions in people's minds.
Right. How do you explain, we keep looking, and we talk about this at home a lot, the differences between Wisconsin and Ohio. Some of the demographics
are the
same. Well, it's the
Browns versus the Packers. That's what it
yeah.
is. Sorry.
Maybe Ohio's, there are more people out of work, and the economy isn't quite as strong as in Wisconsin. But he really did terrifically well in Wisconsin, better than everybody thought he would. And then when you look at how he performed in his key groups in Ohio last night and compare them to where he was in Wisconsin, he just lost all this ground among white men, self-described independents, non-union households, those who were making $50,000 or less, and white Protestants. I mean, down in all of those groups. And he had them in Wisconsin.
Well, here's a question for you. I mean, I know a lot more about Ohio, obviously, than Wisconsin. And, it's my impression that in Ohio, the Clintons have been working Ohio, since Bill Clinton was president.
Hmm.
I mean, and I think part of that is because Ohio is a state that's always been in play. Is Wisconsin a state that's always been in play like that? And, did the Clintons have as much time, more than a decade to really build up the infrastructure for a campaign in Wisconsin that they did in Ohio? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that the Obama campaign was extremely well organized here. She was criticized for, initially people were saying she could do well in Wisconsin. She wasn't here as much as her supporters would like for her to have been here. And he, he's had the ground game, I think, until I don't
think
know.
He's very good. It seems like he's really good at doing a quick, I mean, I know he likes to play basketball, kind of a quick pickup with these campaigns, kind of going into a state and putting it together quite quickly. I'm not sure that Hillary Clinton is quite as agile with
mm-hmm.
that, but I mean, I think that once she's got, a mechanism in place for decades, she's pretty hard to,
mm-hmm.
to dislodge.
Yeah, interesting point. Is there a way for her to get this nomination, Sabrina?
Well, I mean, I gather that there's about, I think, 100 delegates off. I mean, I think that if she has a great rush forward, possibly, I mean, I could see it coming down to some kind of, negotiations at the convention at this point. But, I think that both of them are really tough and persistent, and they both have, adamant backers, and I wouldn't count either of them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of times there's, whoever has the momentum, for instance, Obama had the momentum after this latest round of primaries. There's kind of a tendency in the media to start counting out the person who's behind momentarily. But,
yes,
what really counts is, who wins at the end. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that in their desire for, off-the-cuff punditry.
Right. Well, and there have been some people writing that it would be almost impossible for her to win if you do it by counting the delegates. The superdelegates are another matter, but even if you throw them in, unless they start breaking for her in huge numbers, that if you go by delegates, this is his election. It would be she'd have to win every other state and win it by a fairly large margin. Do you buy into that, or is that math? Everybody's doing the math here, or is that math off somehow?
Well, I haven't done the math, and math's never been my big forte, and that's part of why I went into writing, okay?
I understand.
however, you know, I've been following a lot of, the Hillary Clinton's campaigns, phone calls to reporters and things like that. I would not be at all surprised if we start hearing, as this gets closer to finish, a lot more noise from them about, how about trying to count those votes in Michigan? Because, as you know, Michigan and Florida, both those states, when they had these contests that were not binding because that they were being sanctioned by the Democratic National Committee for moving them up without their permission, but both those states, and they're very populous states, went for Clinton, and there was a lot of talk earlier on about trying to have them counted somehow, and I could see that being renewed from them, that kind of a call.
I can't see how that would happen unless they redo those elections somehow, because the rules were fairly clear, weren't they?
They were, yes. But, still, you got to look at it. Is this the fault of the voters down there? It's, they're party people kind of acting, behaving in a grandstandy fashion, and then you have all these voters who are disenfranchised, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. What about this, again, from the Hillary for President memo that came out today from Penn and Ickes? The vetting of Obama has just begun. They mentioned, the corruption trial of Tony Rezko, which is underway this week.
Yeah.
And, of course, this NAFTA thing. Is there something to that? Well, they're going to be digging around for whatever they can find. And would there be, and has the vetting of Hillary Clinton been completed?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton has basically been she's been through a lot more. I will say that this is an extremely tough election, this primary. But when you look at what Hillary Clinton has been through in terms of past elections, I believe her election, for Senate initially against Rick Lazio in New York was pretty tough. Her whole family life was kind of, put under an extremely uncomfortable microscope while Bill Clinton was in the White House.
Sure.
And she's definitely someone who's been through the ringer and back. Barack Obama, when he was elected to the Senate in Illinois, he beat Alan Keyes. And Alan Keyes was, first of all, there was a guy, I believe, who was supposed to be the Republican nominee initially, who ended up, having to pull out. And then Keyes kind of, I believe, came in at the last minute. Is that your recollection?
Right, yes.
And Keyes, he was somebody who'd run for president quite unsuccessfully for the Republicans, and, he didn't really have a chance. So it seemed like, the stars totally lined up for Barack Obama in winning his Senate race in Illinois, which isn't to say that he's not, quite qualified, but, he did somewhat luck out
mm-hmm.
with that. And, Hillary Clinton has been, you can't really say that her path was greased on a lot of this stuff.
Maybe she won so big because they put him, her husband, that is, in kind of out-of-the-way places, huh?
Well, I also think that because there are people like, for instance, John McCain that have a way of, they speak candidly, and sometimes that doesn't work out well for a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, former President Clinton has a way of doing that. And I think there was maybe a desire to put him in these smaller media markets where he wasn't going to get the kind of, scrutiny, if he said something embarrassing, it would be less likely to get picked up.
Right.
And also, when they send a former president to some of these less, some of these less traveled areas, they get just, people are very excited. The former president's in town.
Sure, sure.
And the kind of coverage they get is a lot more
positive.
Flattering.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting point. We have a ton of people who want to talk. We will let them in now. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest this half hour is Sabrina Eaton, Washington reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. We, of course, are talking about last night's primaries and big wins for Hillary Clinton in three of the four states. Start our calls with Daniel from Northern Illinois. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. I see the results from yesterday as three factors: anger, organization, and a bad week during the debates. I think Ohio is a very polarized state, the have-nots and the havers, social and economic divide. So that's the first reason. And the second one is I think that the Clinton campaign saw Ohio as a general election state, so their organization is really good there. And the third one is Obama was very flat during the debates this week. So what does our guest have to say about that?
Yeah, I thought he was flat across the board the last week. And maybe it's just that we didn't have the press cover him as much. But he makes a good point, Sabrina.
Well, I mean, I was at that debate in Ohio, and I, you know, just talking to a lot of the Ohio people in the spin room afterwards from both sides. I mean, a lot of them seem to think that she came. I mean, when people are on the when the other campaign is, I guess, on the rise, a lot of times the campaign that's kind of trying to get the momentum back goes somewhat negative, as I guess you were mentioning with the ads. But she was really, I think, on the attack a lot during that last debate. And that came across, and some people afterwards were saying that they thought it was shrill. And I think that maybe if you're a woman and you do that, you know, you get, you kind of, you know, if a guy does it, he's tough. But if a woman does it, she's shrill.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I thought that a lot of people after the debate seemed to think that Obama came off better because he was more laid back, but I think that was because his campaign had more momentum and he could, you know, he didn't have to, you know, go after Clinton that way.
Right. An email from Diane from Pepin. One big difference in Ohio was they stopped registering new voters a month ago. Obama's popularity grows as people are introduced to him and gathers momentum, as in Wisconsin.
Well, I didn't know that about the voter registration aspect of it. I could tell you that in talking to a lot of the Obama people last night, they have something called provisional balloting in Ohio where, you know, if you go to a polling place and you're not, you know, they can't find you, your registration there,
mm-hmm.
what you can do is you can cast a ballot and then afterwards they will check that and, you know, see, well, were you registered or not, and then they'll sort of evaluate that, and if you were registered, they will, you know, count your ballot. And the Obama people said that there were a lot of provisional ballots cast in many of the areas that they thought were, you know, strongly for Obama, like, you know, heavily minority neighborhoods in Cuyahoga County, which is where Cleveland is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that could be a factor.
More phone calls in a moment. We're analyzing the primaries, going to Ohio this first half hour with Sabrina Eaton, Washington reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to your phone calls. We go to Dan next from Wanakee. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. As a Democrat, I just have a bit of a problem with the way that Hillary's running the campaign as far as negativity goes. First, that phone call at 3 a.m., I think that's a dishonest argument. I think if something happens like that, they meet in the Situation Room, members from the Defense Department, CIA, and over the next few hours, they make a decision. So, you know, that's scaring up votes, and that's, like, Republican tactics, like getting people to act on their emotions, and that really irritates me. And then the other thing is when she was asked on 60 Minutes about Barack being a Muslim, you know, she wasn't able to give a straight answer, you know, no, I don't
think
there's
an
association there.
Right.
And that's, like, a passive-aggressive, like, form of bigotry, and that's not supposed to be, that's not what the Democratic Party's about. That's like Fox and Friends, you know, and talking about his middle name and insinuating all these things. And it just really bothered me as a Democrat that we have a candidate out there and that no one's speaking out about it. And then one other thing, you know, this business about talking to your guest and also MSNBC counting Michigan as a win for Hillary. Obama wasn't on the ticket. You know, I don't understand how people can keep referring to this as like a win when he wasn't on the ticket. And then just a quick question. What do you know about those ballots, about the shortage in ballots in some of those urban areas that were strong for Obama? Thanks.
Here we go with Ohio again, right? Sabrina.
Okay, well, about the shortage of ballots in some of those urban areas. I know a fair amount about Cuyahoga County because that's where I'm with the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Cleveland is in Cuyahoga County. Basically, you know, they just switched to this type of balloting in Cuyahoga County called optical scan, which is, you know, it looks sort of like the SATs, you know, where you get this little sheet and you have to fill it out, you know, like fill in the ovals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, turnout was really big, and in some of the precincts they didn't have enough of the forms. So they did keep the precincts open till about 9 o'clock, some of them. The Obama campaign had requested, had gone to court asking that these places be kept open, and they were. I gather that in Franklin County, which is the county where Columbus is located, a similar request was made, but it was not, I don't believe the courts held it open. One of our reporters was at Obama's, the party for Obama supporters in Cleveland last night, and he talked to Mayor Frank Jackson, who is the mayor of Cleveland. And, you know, Mayor Jackson didn't seem to think that there was any hijinks going on there. I mean, as I'm sure your listeners are aware, there have been issues with voting in Ohio, it's a big production, and, you know, sometimes things happen in terms of, the miscalculating, allocation of resources, and I think that's really what it was and not some, effort to disenfranchise people.
Mm-hmm. Were you disturbed at all by that reaction of hers to whether or not Obama was a Christian or a Muslim that was asked on 60 Minutes? Her comment, as far as I know, he
You know, is. I did not see that, so I can't really react to it. Sorry.
Okay. Let's go next to Ed from West Dallas. Hi, Ed.
Well, thankfully, Dennis Kucinich, the only friend that organized labor has, won his contested primary yesterday. And the reality of Barack Obama in terms of the NAFTA issue is really coming into play. We have this disingenuous overture to Canada over the last few days, where he basically stated that I don't mean what I'm saying to the American worker in terms of protecting your jobs, protecting your way of life. And people are starting to see through this Reagan-esque posturing of Obama. We saw it again this morning on the Today Show, where he cast himself in this Ronald Reagan mode. And we in the American workforce that have been the victims of Reaganomics don't want a nominee who is the personification of a Reagan style. And this came through very clearly yesterday in Ohio.
Sabrina.
Well, I don't know that I've ever heard Obama compared to Reagan that way, although, I mean, he's a very good, I think they're both extremely good speakers and good communicators. With respect to Dennis Kucinich, I'm actually like a big expert on Dennis Kucinich because when I'm not when Ohio isn't in the presidential spotlight, you know, every 4 years, I do cover the House of Representatives, and he's like one of my regular dudes. I think that Dennis, part of the reason he was able to get reelected, and he had a fairly good margin, was he had four people running against him. A lot of folks in his district felt that he had said when he was running for re-election in 2006 that he was not going to run for president again. They were dismayed when he went back on what they construed as a promise. And I think that he's going to get a run for his money from the Republican nominee, Jim Trakas, who's the former Cuyahoga County Republican chairman. I think that a lot of the people who may have there's just a lot of people who are very anti Dennis Kucinich in his district. There are a lot of people who love him too. Part of it is because he has no fear of saying and doing polarizing things, and when you do that, you tap people that either love you or hate you.
Yeah. One more phone call for you, and then we go to Texas. Anne from Madison. Hi, Anne.
Hi. What I found so disconcerting and unnerving was Hillary's supreme self-confidence in the weeks before the Ohio primary. And it's a known fact that the biggest states like Ohio, Florida, Texas, and New York have the most potential for election fixing because they have the most powerful machines, especially with the recent history of vote tampering in Ohio and in Florida. And, for instance, in New York City, some wards in Harlem didn't register a single vote for Obama. I wondered whether you thought there was any possibility of hanky-panking yesterday's elections.
Well, I always like to think that there isn't, and I hadn't heard any allegations last night of that. You know, it might be worth remembering in Ohio that the last time around in 2004, Ohio was run predominantly by Republicans. Ken Blackwell was the Secretary of State. He ended up losing his gubernatorial bid in 2006 to Ted Strickland, the current governor. We have a new Ohio Secretary of State who's a Democrat. So to kind of assume that the whole, you know, it's being run by totally different people now. And, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I think that you're going to have problems with elections just because, you know, it's like it's running a very complicated statewide effort. And so I think that there's always going to be something that goes wrong just because of, you know, Murphy's Law. But whether or not there's some kind of a systemic problem that that leads to tampering with votes in Ohio, I kind of doubt it. I think that if it was there, one or the other parties would have brought it out and made a big fuss about it, and I just don't think that that's occurred.
Sabrina, thank you so much. The race goes on.
Okay,
thanks
for
being
for
with
me.
Us. Yeah, Sabrina Eaton, Washington reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. We are going to go to Texas now to Todd Gilman, Washington Bureau staff writer for the Dallas Morning News. Texas didn't favor Clinton as strongly, certainly, as Ohio did. Here are some of the numbers. She was had a net margin of white women up 21 points in Texas, self-identified Democrats up 9, $50,000 or less up 9, white Catholics up 19. The numbers similar to what we've seen in the South. She did no better and no worse than she has in other states. As for Obama, white men minus 1, self-identified independents minus 1, $50,000 or less plus 1, and white Protestants minus 20. One of the writers from Jake Cost from Real Clear Politics, he said, what can we conclude from all of this? It should be clear that Texas and Ohio performed in a manner roughly consistent with the states prior to Wisconsin. From this, we might infer that any momentum that Obama developed after the Potomac primary was not carried through yesterday. Wisconsin did not help him, of course, in Texas and Ohio, as Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. seemed to help him in Wisconsin. The states voting yesterday seemed to vote, quote, normally. So we're going to be talking about Texas. We, you know, it still has this. I haven't been able to quite figure it out. This very unusual system of doing a primary and then doing a caucus. And why are they doing that? And are the caucus results in now? And how many delegates go to both? And we're going to talk about all of that with Todd. And welcome more of your phone calls and emails. Our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Email talk at WPR.org. Hi, Todd. Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure thing. Good to be here.
Can you please explain, and I guess some of us just are so dense we need to have it explained many times. You got one-third of the delegates coming from caucuses yesterday and two-thirds coming from the primary. Is that it?
Yeah, it's a hybrid system. I'm not the best person to ask about the very strange and storied history of that system, but it basically borrows elements from systems that you see in other states and just kind of jams them together in a way that nobody, including many of us hardcore, longtime Texas political reporters, really cared much about or paid attention to before this year.
Right.
You know, most of it is just direct apportionment selection of these delegates by state Senate districts. We have 32 U.S. House districts and 31 state Senate districts, so they're roughly the same size as a congressional district. And it gets a little even weirder than that, but I'll go back to that in a second. And then there are other delegates that are chosen by the caucus process that you're referring to, and obviously it has come to be known as the Texas two-step because, you know, you always have to give it a clever name. The really weird part of it, I think, is the allocation of delegates by state Senate district is unequal. The formula gets into some really higher math and has to do with the Democratic performance in the last two statewide elections. So it's actually a rolling total in any given presidential election. The number of delegates available, say, in the district of a state Senator Royce West in the Dallas area, who is a big Obama supporter, kind of an inner city district, which is the highest number of delegates this the last two elections were, how enthusiastic a particular constituency were in the past couple elections. So that was one advantage delegate-wise that Obama had coming into the Texas primaries. Primary is that most of the high-performing districts were heavier with African Americans, and most of the very light-performing districts, just for a variety of reasons, because of the way the last two statewide contests worked out, were Hispanic districts. Mm-hmm. So this was why the Obama camp kept emphasizing, you know, she might win Texas popular vote, but we're going to come out by, you know, managing to add to our delegate lead. That mm-hmm. was their case coming in. Because if you just looked at the math, that's the way it looked.
Mm-hmm. Texas seemed to be one of those states where polls have been so off, but in terms of what was happening the couple days before the Texas primary caucus, the polls seemed to be right on.
Well, some of them did.
Yeah.
Some of them not so much. I mean, there were some polls that had Obama up by several points coming in. Look, I'm one of those people that doesn't put a lot of stock in polls, particularly in primaries, because they're notoriously hard to get to the idea of which voters are actually going to come out to the polls. And when pollsters are dealing with a universe of 600 or even 900 what they call likely Democrats, well, it's all about intensity in a primary. Yeah, okay, you say you're a Democrat. Okay, you've voted the last three times, but do you really, really care enough to come out? And don't even get into the caucus process. Do you care enough to come back at 7:15?
Exactly.
And
spend your whole day. Right.
But I mean, setting aside that, you know, the second step of the two-step, just the plain straight up, you know, what everybody can really understand, popular vote, and, you know, even we ignorant political reporters, I just think it's extremely difficult to judge. And one of the things that we are going to be poring over today, and I mean, if people told you an answer right now, I don't think it would necessarily be that accurate. What was the relative turnout among Black Texas voters versus Hispanic Texas voters?
Mm.
The early indications are that Black turnout in Texas was somewhat, you know, substantially less than Hispanic turnout.
Mm.
And this would have made a huge difference in the popular
right,
vote.
Right, right. Why do you expect that might be the case, Tun?
Well, Hillary had huge, huge institutional advantages in popularity in South Texas, which is the only area of the state that you can say, well, pretty much all the voters, not all of them, but, you know, an overwhelming majority of them are Hispanic. And then you can very easily gauge intensity and turnout there because it's relatively homogeneous demographically. When you start getting into urban areas where people live in you know, pretty scattered kind of ways. It's not as if Dallas County is segregated. This part over here is Hispanic, this is Anglo, and this is Black. People live among each other. And it gets very, very tricky to try to tease out from the precinct results, you know, where exactly the votes are. Obviously, we have exit polling, which I confess I have not looked through yet for Texas. But you know, this is why the political consultants make all the money and political journalists make somewhat less.
What about this idea that people are tossing around today, and I guess there's a lot of truth in this, that for some reason, and tell me why this might be the case, that people voted, somebody has said, the way that we would expect them to vote, that any momentum that Obama developed after the Potomac primary was not carried through yesterday. So Wisconsin, which voted for him in pretty big numbers, didn't carry through yesterday. We're back to the way people were voting prior Potomac.
I'll give you two contradictory answers on that. One is that I think that to say that people voted in a preordained way or an expectable way is to minimize the incredible effort that was put forth by the ground volunteers and by the candidates themselves and their strategists. I mean, Hillary fought darn hard
mm-hmm.
to fight back to this point
mm-hmm.
from this terrible loss of momentum. If she had curled up in a ball and said, oh, my God, I have just lost 10 states in a row. I haven't won a primary in a month. I'm a loser. I have no hope. Well, she would not have won Ohio and Texas.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't work that way. And if Obama had coasted, if he had truly said, you know what, I'm on a roll. I don't need to do anything at all. I don't need to spend millions of dollars. I don't need to keep raising more money. I don't need to, you know, draw these huge 15, 20,000 crowds and do all these town hall meetings. Well, he wouldn't have come nearly as close as he did in these two states.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first part of the answer. They worked really hard, and you need to pay attention to that. On the other hand, I have argued, and I don't know if I'm in a minority among pseudo-pundits. I'm not a real pundit. I just sometimes play one on Wisconsin Public Radio. But I do think that a lot of these elections are preordained. I mean, we went into February, and the Clinton camp said, and the Obama camp kind of sort of admitted, all of the contests in February were stacked in Obama's favor. We all knew that. Well, the demographics tell the tale of the tape, and that was the case in Texas and Ohio also. Clinton's whole hope, and it turned out to be true, was, come on, give me a break. Those states are not states where I have built-in advantages. Texas and Ohio are. Mm. Just wait until we get to March 4th. And it did, in fact, turn out to be that case. Now, the actual path from point A to point B was circuitous and very difficult and very expensive. Mm.
Right. And yet, when you looked at what happened prior to yesterday, he was winning by huge margins. That said something, Todd, didn't it?
I never believed that. And that's why I – now, okay, I'll give two answers because I'm tired and I haven't had enough coffee yet because I was up last night.
I'm sure you were. I'm sure.
But, you know, it's ridiculous when the candidates say – I'm up 20 points. I mean, it's all about managing expectations. It's all about posturing. I understand why they do it. Of course they're going to do it. But it's meaningless for him to say, you know, 3 weeks ago coming out of Super Tuesday and you know, then those next 10 contests in the Potomac primary in Wisconsin that I was up. Look how great I did.
Yeah.
I mean, she could just as easily and will make the case, hey, he was up and I overcame that.
Mm-hmm.
Those snapshots are meaningless because real voters who actually went to the polls yesterday in Texas and Ohio, you know, maybe they were casually watching. You know, it's been a great show for months and it's dragged on for a year and a half. But really, really, when it comes down to it, voters don't focus until they have to. This has been an amazing, amazing two-week period in Texas, particularly. I know Texas better than Ohio. I mean, Ohioans are used to having a lot of attention lavished on them, particularly in the fall, because they're a battleground state. Texas is not, or has not been in previous recent contests in presidential years, a real battleground. Texas voters are not used to this kind of attention. They had a two-week, you know, front row seat to presidential politics.
Mm-hmm.
That most of them were not used to, and that sharpens the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you come down. I mean, I live in Washington now. I lived in Dallas for 15 years, and I never ever was turning on the TV and able to catch what the latest attack ad was in a presidential primary or presidential contest because they just bypassed Texas. Well, these people have been, you know, my readers here, they've been barraged, and it just makes a difference. That's all
right,
I'm saying.
Right. Let's go to Keith from Shorewood, our first caller for you. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Todd. Something about that mind sharpening thing you just alluded to. Two things. First of all, don't forget, one thing that I think is not being appreciated today is that just a couple of weeks out, coming into this race, Barack Obama was down like about 20 points in the polls in Texas, or maybe more. And so he was able to catch up within the 3 or 4 points that came out of the election yesterday. So Hillary didn't come away with the big victory that she needed in order to get the jump in delegates. So I mean, it's, you know, of course she should be allowed to feel good about it, but it's not to the extent with what her campaign needed. And the second thing about that is I just talked to a friend of mine down in Texas, down in Austin, And she said that at her caucus, they normally get about 20 to 25 people to show up for these things. She said last night they signed in 470 people.
Oh, my.
I like to call those amateurs. First timers.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like, Texas was totally written off as a Democratic state. It's still going to be hard. But at least now it seems like Texans, Democratic Texans, which was kind of a dying breed, are now have a reason to get a little more excited about coming out for the process.
You raise a couple of really great points. First of all, your latter point about exciting Democrats is absolutely the case, and it's not just that people came out in big numbers as a one-shot deal. The Obama campaign, in particular, had these huge rallies, and every time they did, you had to sign up. You had to RSVP. You could have just shown up, but generally people RSVP'd. The reason they did that is so that they could collect email addresses and phone numbers and addresses. There is an army of new Democratic foot soldiers out there waiting to be corralled in future contests, and that will trickle down into the state legislative races, which, as we learned through the Tom DeLay episode, can have huge impact not just on state politics and the state allocation of congressional seats, but even national politics when you have a very close Congress. The Texas Democrats are thrilled to death that the race lasted this long and became so exciting for them. The other point that you make, I would take a little bit of issue with the assertion that Clinton needed a huge blowout in order to catch up to Obama in delegates. Yes, that is true. Without a blowout, and she'll continue to have this problem. Without blowouts in the next contest, she won't be able to overtake him in the pledged delegates. And the Obama camp likes to spin this as she has no path mathematically to the nomination without relying on superdelegates. But what they don't like to say is Obama doesn't either. Obama's entire case for I should be the nominee because I'm a little bit ahead in pledged delegates is that the superdelegates ought to go with the flow. And when you win, I heard somebody allude to the Indy 500. I'm 25 feet ahead, but there's still 25 miles to go. Let's call the race right now. Everybody else ought to come over to my side.
Hmm.
I mean, he has no mathematical possibility either without those superdelegates. And I have to think that after Hillary stopped him cold in Ohio and Texas, even though it was probably, as I argued a few minutes ago, preordained that she would. It was preordained, but it wasn't, because he was on a roll and everybody thought he was on a roll, and he was really hoping to be able to at least poach one of those big states from her.
Right.
And if he had, a lot of superdelegates would have flowed his way.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly. And they may eventually, but he was hoping like today, tomorrow.
So tell me where it stands mathematically then. He needs to get how many more superdelegates?
Well, he needs to get almost as many superdelegates as she does. It'll take me a minute to pull it up. But, in the number of pledged, if you look at the total universe of pledged delegates that will ultimately be available,
right,
he's only ahead by 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it's 39% to 37%. And with the remaining delegates yet to be allocated in the states coming up.
Okay, so how will all of this be decided, Todd?
I think it's going to be decided through a very long, potentially ugly slog through the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
We've got minor contests. Sorry, folks in Wyoming. I love Wyoming. Been camping there, but Wyoming's a minor contest. I didn't even know they had Democrats there. Mississippi next Tuesday, but the real fight is going to be Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
The governor is on the side of Clinton. It's an industrial Rust Belt state. There are a lot of different demographics there. There's inner city folks that'll probably be a little stronger for Obama. It'll be very hard fought. I got to tell you, maybe you can tell me. I don't know what they're going to fight over the next 7 weeks coming into Pennsylvania. What else is there left to say? I know things can happen in an election. But are they really going to be fighting over 3 a.m. phone calls for the next 7 weeks? I really truly wonder, do they have some nasty opposition research that they just haven't pulled out yet?
I assume they do, don't you?
I assume that they do and have chosen not to because each side knows and has been told in no uncertain terms by whatever party elders might be around whispering advice, don't do it.
Mm.
Because if you try to kill off Clinton and she ends up beating you, for example, just to pick one side, well, you're going to destroy our chances for the fall.
Right.
And ultimately, they still... I think that they've both stayed this side of the bright line of ugliness. Now they've been fighting hard, but they've been generally fighting on fair terms. And I would be surprised if it got really truly ugly swift boat style
mm-hmm.
in a primary. But I don't know. People get tired, they get intense, they get cranky,
mm-hmm.
and they say we're this close if we could just kill him off.
Yeah. Todd Gilman, Washington Bureau Chief Staff Writer for the Dallas Morning News, is our guest this half hour. More phone calls in a moment. Thanks for your call, Keith. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll return to phone calls in just a moment. First, this email from Drew. Considering there are open primaries, Todd, in both Ohio and Texas, is there any way of knowing how many Republicans crossed over and voted for Clinton? It's no secret that she unites Republicans better than any current Republican can. And then, of course, we had this call from Rush Limbaugh yesterday to do just that.
What a fabulous question. I have been wrestling with this. It will be impossible. Well, it would not be impossible, but it would take a tremendous amount of effort to figure it out in Texas, at least. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you could go through all of the voter rolls, and you could take all of the voters and figure out if they had voted previously in primaries that were opposite to the way they voted this year. So you could figure that out. The reason it's a fabulous question, we have a blog. Everybody's got blogs nowadays. Ours is trailblazers.beloblog.com. Look it up. So I posted a thing yesterday. One of my colleagues posted a note early in the day saying, I live in a really Republican part of the county just north of Dallas. It's the county that is represented by Sam Johnson in Congress. He's one of the most conservative guys in Congress. And he noticed that in his precinct there was a very heavy turnout. And he thought that was really puzzling because, there didn't seem to be that much enthusiasm on the Republican side, was wondering what was going on. So that got me to thinking. I had talked to my mother-in-law who lives in North Dallas, and she was telling me that when she went to vote, there were Republicans all around her saying, I'm going to go vote for Hillary because we could really take her in the ball. So I posted a little thing on our blog, and I'm not exaggerating. Within about an hour, we had nearly 100 emails, maybe with 2 hours, 100 emails. You're darn right I did that. We can take her. Absolutely.
Huh.
All of these Republicans were unabashed about doing this. It's totally anecdotal, probably impossible to quantify specifically, but there is no doubt that there was some crossover mischief-making.
Hmm. Well, it's time for that story.
Yeah.
David from Ironwood, hi.
Yes. I'd bring up the Michigan-Florida thing again. What would we say if England did not count London? Just say, well, we're not going to count those votes. What would we say about the English elections? What are we saying about the Russian elections that they had where the rules are, they all follow the rules, but the rules pretty much preclude a real Democrat? I mean, this is so important.
So we need to count them? We need to redo elections or count them as they are?
Redo Michigan.
Okay. What do you think about that, Tubb?
I don't know. It was a real nail biter the other day until they called Siberia for Medvedev. I was really wondering how that was going to go. I think they are ultimately going to have to redo Michigan and Florida.
Really?
If for no other reason than imagine the spectacle at the Democratic convention when delegates show up from Michigan and Florida or people who believe that they are delegates, and they're shut out. These are two battleground states that are absolutely critical to any path to the White House for a Democrat. And it's inconceivable that there will be no resolution to this. A do-over. Here's what's going to happen, I think, and I really don't know anything. But there's no way that Obama, as long as he still has any kind of lead in delegates, is going to negotiate in good faith for a do-over. I mean, it may be imposed on both candidates by the DNC, and he was on the Today Show this morning saying, whatever the DNC says, we play by the rules, and we'll play by the rules, and we'll do it.
Right.
Hillary, obviously, is much more forceful arguing for it. They have to have some presence at the convention. They have to be part of this process. Democrats in those states will be so disenchanted with the party if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. We're out of time. Give me that blog again. I didn't write it down.
Oh, it's, well, our newspaper site is dallasnews.com, and you can find it on there. It's called Trailblazers.
Okay.
So that's probably the easiest way to find it.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll get a little sleep today.
Well, I have a long day ahead of me before I get to go home to Washington, but I appreciate the thought.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
Todd Gilman, he's Washington Bureau staff writer for the Dallas Morning News, and we also thank Sabrina Eaton, Washington reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, for being with us and for all of your calls. Thanks. We could have gone hours on this. We love all this stuff, don't we? But we'll move to another subject following the news from National Public Radio. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News ahead from National Public Radio and more Wednesday conversation to follow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.